CMC Markets is one of the world's leading CFD and spread betting providers with more than three decades of experience. Trade with CMC and you're trading with experts. 79% of retail investor accounts lose money.
Welcome to the City View podcast in partnership with CMC Markets. I'm Andy Sylvester, acting editor of City AM, and we'll launch right into the news, analysis, and interviews that you need for the week ahead in the city. Hello and welcome to the City View podcast, and welcome indeed to 2021. If it isn't too late to say Happy New Year, a Happy New Year from all of us, although admittedly the news at the start of last week has not necessarily filled people with optimism for the first couple of months of the year. The FTSE, however, very different story, a really good week to kick off the year. In a minute, I'll be talking to Susanna Streeter, a familiar face from business broadcast media over many years and now at Hargreaves Lansdown, and then to Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, who'll talk about the City of London, cities in general, and of course, the government's response to the global pandemic. All that to come, but we'll kick off with James Warrington, one of City AM's star reporters, looks at tech and media and a whole variety of other sectors. James, good to have you on today.
Good to be here. Thanks, Andy.
I alluded to the FTSE having a cracking little sort of rally to start 2021, and there does seem to be some optimism as you look down the pipe to sort of April, May, rather than necessarily January, February in business. But across your beat, good results for Reach last week. Is there some optimism in sort of tech and media world that maybe this year they can start to kick on?
Yes, absolutely. Well, I mean, tech was one of the big winners last year with the pandemic as we all became even more reliant on their products during the shift to home working. Now, obviously, with a fresh national lockdown in place, tech firms will be optimistic that this bullish run will continue. And obviously, there's a bumper year of IPOs ahead in 2021, and that's really being spearheaded by tech stocks. So Deliveroo, Darktrace, Music Magpie and Moonpig are just some of the big British tech firms that will be eyeing up a London stock market listing in 2021. And for media, as you mentioned, it was a more tough year for them. While consumption went up, people were after their services. There was a big slump in the advertising market. In fact, the worst ever on record after the outbreak of COVID. But with the vaccine rollout in place, as you say, looking forward to more April, May sort of time, there'll be a cautious optimism, I would have thought, that maybe things could start to get back on track this year.
Yeah, indeed. You alluded to tech, and we'll talk about that industry's issues in a second. But just sort of want to talk about one big story last week, which amid the utter chaos in Washington and various other bits and pieces in the news, people may have missed, is Brexit now starting to have a material impact, not necessarily in places that you'd expect, city jobs, which were supposed to be leaving in their, you know, hundreds of thousands, according to some commentators, basically amounts to 5,000 to 7,000, according to Andrew Bailey, but actually just in the movement of goods. And we've already got disruption at the French border, and also retailers looking again at whether they can shift their products to the rest of the EU.
Absolutely. Well, it's something that we've been talking about for ages. Remember all those stories and pictures last year with the lorry parks in Kent. But as you say, we're now starting to see the material impact. And there's been a real issue with a high number of lorries being refused entry or getting delayed at the French border. And this all comes down to issues with paperwork. Now, while the trade deal that we agreed with the EU on Christmas Eve does mean there are no tariffs, there are now new regulatory and custom checks in place. And that means that there are tougher new rules and not everyone is ready to deal with it. Now, you mentioned retailers there. I think they're probably the hardest hit. Many are having to review their supply chains to Ireland and elsewhere in the EU. John Lewis and TK Maxx are among the companies to suspend deliveries to Northern Ireland. M&S has also warned its supply chains could be disrupted. Percy Pigs, you'll be sad to hear, are among the products that might not be delivered to Ireland at the moment. But it really comes down to these complex rules of origin, which determine whether tariffs are applied to goods that are imported to the UK and then moved back out to other markets in the EU. And really, it's about retailers and other businesses just trying to get down to the nitty-gritty and understand how exactly these new rules apply to them.
Yeah, car makers managed to grab themselves an exemption from those rules of origin regulations when it comes to how much of a car is made in the UK, whether it's assembled in the UK and how many of the parts come from abroad, et cetera, et cetera. There's some complex formulas And I think probably some of those complaining that they only had 6 days from the Brexit deal to it happening, probably not helpful. But I want to talk again about another story last week, which will have an impact for the rest of the year, really, which is around the tech wars. So Twitter banning Donald Trump, Facebook obviously taking President off air, so to speak, for a little while there during the Capitol chaos. Now Parler's been thrown off, which is a sort of a free, markets itself as a free speech, I suppose, platform, now been thrown off the Apple Store. Big tech starting to take a bit more interventionist approach, do you think, next year in the content on its platforms, which I guess leads them into different regulatory waters as well?
Well, absolutely. And this has been bubbling away at the surface for some time now. And really the atmosphere, I think, in Silicon Valley or towards Silicon Valley has been changing and maybe turning against big tech in recent months. Trump, you mentioned, obviously he's a huge account. He basically uses Twitter as a megaphone for his supporters. And people have been calling on apps like Twitter and Facebook to take a more interventionist approach with him. This week, though, I really feel for many people, a threshold was crossed. And now, as you say, he's been banned. Zuckerberg, the Facebook founder, has traditionally been reluctant to block Trump, has now basically said that the risks are too great to have him on the platform. And what it all really feeds into, as you say, is regulation. There have been calls for platforms such as Twitter and Facebook and social media accounts in general to take responsibility for what's posted to their platforms. Now, for the tech firms, this will mean having to step in. It will cost them more money. There are fines with the new rules coming up if they break it. And so the interventionist approach will be seen by many as a way of potentially trying to fend off this upcoming regulation and show that they are capable of taking responsibility for what's on their platform. But I think, to be honest, the tide has already turned now, and 2021 will be a crunch year for big tech. And I think all we're going to see is tougher new rules that really try to rein in some of the power of these platforms.
Yeah, and a big year for media as well, because Google and Facebook, to a slightly lesser degree, have been eating their lunch when it comes to digital advertising. So it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out this coming year. James, thanks for that quick whiz through the week's story, and I will see you in the newsroom.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, James. And now we'll turn to a quick look ahead with a familiar face from the world of business media, now at Hargreaves Lansdown as Senior Investment and Markets Analyst. Susanna Streeter, wonderful to have you on the podcast.
Great to be here, Andy.
So second week of 2021 coming, sort of after a first week, which I think, you know, I mentioned to James quite well, really. People were sort of starting to look towards the future a bit. A big week of results, but let's look first at the general sort of climate, really, with the US stimulus package and Brexit starting to bed in. What's your feeling for the week ahead? What are you looking at in the wider world before we look at individual firms?
Well, in the wider world, I really do think that to some extent, investors remain fixed across the pond, where, of course, we've seen the political division causing considerable social unrest, to say the least, last week. And of course, contrary to some expectations, the markets did rise looking through the violence to the future of US politics and that expectation of much greater stimulus. Now that the Senate is in the Democrats' control as well, this expectation that there will be a big surge in government spending, which will really boost the recovery. So I do think, though, that we are going to have some measure of volatility, some market volatility before Joe Biden is sworn in. We still do have quite a few days to go. Nobody knows exactly what may happen. There could be some further political unrest, of course. That is what is concerning many people. But what is also interesting to watch is what is happening on the NASDAQ. We did see a slight fall in the NASDAQ last week, particularly when the news of that that swing of the Senate came in, and that's under expectations that perhaps there's going to be greater regulation of the tech sector going forward. Now, it's unlikely that we'll have any kind of big swings at all next week. I think it's certainly much more of a longer term issue, but I do think that there is going to be eyes across the pond next week.
Yeah, it's fascinating that, because you know, you talk about Biden's cabinet and the way the election result landed meant that some of the more radical economic policies that maybe his supporters were looking for will probably not come to pass. But where he might find that radicalism is, as you say, on sort of more more engagement within business, more regulation on business. That'll be fascinating to watch. But look, closer to home, we've got a big week of trading updates. Three retailers of a very different kind, Tesco, ASOS, and of course ABF, who are behind Primark. Look quickly at Tesco first. Supermarkets seem to have sort of managed to ride out the uncertainty before Christmas pretty well.
Absolutely. Supermarkets really have been riding the wave of online shopping during the pandemic. And of course, Christmas was no exception because shoppers were curled up at home. They couldn't go out and socialize. They spent on groceries instead, on supermarket treats. For example, we saw last week Sainsbury's premium champagne was up by more than 50%. Now, if Tesco follows the trend, it's likely that sales of the traditional festive fare have rocketed yet again. But it's also going to be important to look at what's happening surrounding full-year profit expectations, because Tesco has had really huge costs associated with COVID, and also losses at Tesco Bank meant that its half-year profits shrunk. So it's also going to have to try and protect margins, and that's where it's going to be interesting with all this price-cutting going on. We heard again from Sainsbury's last week, and I expect Tesco as well is going to be following this trend, reducing prices because it's very competitive at that end of the market, but that is going to have an impact on margins. So certainly, supermarkets have been the big winners because, of course, they're classed as essential retailers. They can stay open in lockdown and sell all of the household goods as well. And there as well, we've seen the likes of B&M, European Value Retail, really profiting. It's got a small range of groceries, a big range of household goods, and it saw its revenues surge by more than a quarter for its UK stores. So there's a real trend going on there.
Yeah, and ABF and ASOS, two sides of the same retailing coin, really. ABF obviously, you know, hit pretty hard by lockdown restrictions and everything being closed, very much focused on the high street still. ASOS, again, much like supermarkets, as you put it, riding the wave of lockdown.
Yeah, so both really focused on the fashion conscious shopper, but one an e-commerce platform and what a high street platform. And you know who's been the big winner. Though, interestingly, when lockdowns have eased and the doors have flung open once more at Primark, it's seen a real sales surge. It's got lots of very loyal shoppers. Its customers are real fans. They'll wait to spend their money when the stores are open once more. However, we did get a warning from ABF that Primark's look set to lose 650 million in sales due to these lockdowns. So it's going to hit hard. It will also raise questions about whether this is the right strategy for Primark going forward to stay as a high street only retailer and not have an e-commerce arm to speak of, whereas the likes of ASOS really have cleaned up as shoppers have turned their bedrooms into changing rooms. And it's been one of the pandemic winners. So really interesting to see what comes out of those two updates later this week.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. You look at Primark and you do wonder if investors will just bank on, as you say, that demand coming back, because you see a lot of analysts talking about demand at the luxury end driving a sort of luxury revival in 2021, but it'll certainly be the same on the high street as well, you would imagine. And the other sort of grouping of updates this week comes from recruiters. We've got three, Robert Walters, Page and Hayes, among others, you know, to a certain degree, almost bellwethers of the UK jobs market. So not so much on the recruitment front, but when you look at employment, what's your sense of where most people in the city are starting to think that that's going to go this year in the UK? Because it's been a remarkable success story over the past decade, really, since the financial crisis, that unemployment did not go up. We've obviously had a raft of redundancies in 2020, the furlough scheme extended till April. It seems to me, looking at it in the whole, we're just in a world of still remarkable uncertainty.
Absolutely. So remarkable, this uncertainty, because of course, before Christmas, it was all looking rosier, wasn't it, with the vaccine breakthroughs and the vaccine rollouts. And in fact, even though recruitment had been put into the deep freeze, there was a small increase in permanent positions in December. So a renewed boost of confidence for the jobs market. But certainly that confidence has been ebbing away as the more infectious strain of COVID has gone on the rampage. And we are expecting, well, we were anyway, in December, a peak of unemployment at around 7.5% in the middle of 2021, around 2.6 million out of work. And it's really going to be the hospitality sector and the retail sector that is hammered the most. But unfortunately, because we have got this latest round of lockdowns, I do foresee that it's going to be a little bit worse than that by the middle of 2021. It's going to be a question, though, of survival of the fittest. Those hospitality firms that are able to, you know, still have cash flow, still stay afloat through this crisis, when they emerge, they will be in a really good position to benefit from this pent-up demand that I am sure is going to be unleashed, because with people in lockdown for so many months, they are going to want to go out and socialize once more. So I do think we're going to see a real surge for the hospitality sector in the second half of the year. It's a different story, though, for retail, because the pandemic really has just accelerated the shift to digital that many of us thought would see over 5 years, not 5 months. So I don't expect such a big bounce back for retail. Certainly for some retailers, as we've been talking about, Andy, Primark is likely to benefit from that pent-up demand. But certainly, I still think it's going to be tough for the high street later in 2021.
Yeah, and landlords will have to take a fairly pragmatic approach to that as well. You're talking about survival of the fittest on hospitality in particular. You know, there has been a remarkable amount of flexibility across the private sector in 2020 to ensure that some businesses that would otherwise have lost premises and pretty much lost their businesses are able to survive. The question is whether they can get through these next couple of months, I suppose. And landlords, I suggest that landlords looking down the pipe and down the line might want to be a little more charitable when it comes to collecting rent over the next few months and to ensure they get to the other side. But look, thinking about the year as a whole, really, as we look towards 2021, I'm talking to the Chancellor in just a minute. My guess is he'll strike a fairly upbeat tone about the UK economy. In the city, is there a general sense of optimism? Is the light at the end of the tunnel flickering? Or do you think that people are able to kind of ride past this current strain, which, you know, the government suggests will be over in 2 months to a certain degree with the vaccine?
Well, definitely light is flickering at the end of the tunnel, but unfortunately that tunnel has got even longer, hasn't it? And that is the problem. So I do think that the Brexit deal kicked neatly into goal and what seemed like the last game of the season really did add to the wave of confidence. Bit more confidence to the optimism already lapping around at the London market because of the vaccine breakthroughs. And we saw, of course, the FTSE surge by 6%, its biggest rally since November. So certainly 2021 has got off to a really good start. The expectations of stimulus for the UK economy certainly has helped as well. And although the UK is still economically in an abyss and we've got this more infectious strain setting back recovery, there are signs that it is going to emerge battered but resilient later this year. Investor confidence is making a comeback. The UK and Europe have registered their best scores since January 2020. And what I found really interesting as well is some figures that came out as far as startups. In the first week of December, there were 5,000 more company incorporations than during the first full week of December at 2019. And so it does seem as though we're seeing lots of redundancies, of course, but there's a real entrepreneurial spirit that I think will help propel the recovery. And I think, you know, it is, if there's confidence, then there will be much more appetite to get into the London market, because UK stocks have been significantly undervalued compared to their peers, their global peers, since the Brexit vote. That's not just because of Brexit, it's also due to the weighting of the index, of course, as well. But I think we will get more of this virtuous circle effect, enabling firms to ramp up investment if there's a higher share price and offer higher returns to shareholders. I do think there's still going to be a sector differential. We've seen the oil price rise, and that's certainly helped the energy giants. But I do think that the prospects for oil and gas are not simply going to be guided by the oil price, but also by their progress and a shift to renewable energy. And of course, as we mentioned, there's this threat of regulation hanging over the tech sector as well, which could cause ripples through the stock market, but actually could help by investors diversifying into smaller cap companies in neglected sectors, which could help the London market as well. So I certainly feel as though we are at the start of a much more optimistic year ahead. We've just got to get through this tunnel of uncertainty.
Yeah, I have to say, Susanna, I cannot wait to start writing stories and have our reporters writing stories about investment and M&A and IPOs rather than job losses and threats of redundancies. It will be a welcome start when we can do that. But look, thank you so much for joining us, Susanna, and I'm sure we will speak again soon.
You're welcome.
Now to our special guest today, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rishi Sunak. He took the job in February 2020 when newspapers started to pay attention to an outbreak of an unknown disease in central China. Since then, he's played good cop to the government's lockdown bad cop, stepping in with packages of support utterly unimaginable before the last 12 months. He's the most popular politician in the country by most polling, despite overseeing one recession and the economy heading for a double dip. But what does the Chancellor, who worked for Goldman's and a couple of hedgies, think about the recovery? And what does Brexit actually mean for the city of London? And he joins me now. Chancellor, a pleasure to have you here on the City AM podcast.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me, Andy.
No, thank you. Look, we'll get on to what I really want to talk about today, which is sort of the other side of the pandemic. Now there's an element of a light at the end of the tunnel. But I'd sort of be remiss, really, if I didn't ask a little bit about where we are today. You don't need me to give you the kind of the GDP forecasts and the numbers. We've all read enough about that. But every day, still, my inbox is full of business groups, sector by sector, asking for more support, for a little more from the Treasury. I guess kind of the question is, you know, are you confident that you've laid on enough support for businesses over the past year and as we enter this lockdown three, as it's being called, pretty disappointing sequel, so that, you know, if the vaccine turns up on time, if the rollout goes as well as we all hope it will, that there will be that kind of business on the other side, that these businesses will survive to prime the recovery on the other side?
Yeah, well, Andy, first of all, it's what I acknowledge and appreciate is it's been a really difficult time for so many different companies up and down the country, all in their different ways, grappling with trying to run their businesses, look after their employees, deal with restrictions. And I pay tribute to them because, I've seen firsthand what a great job they've done to try and adapt to the circumstances. And it gives me a lot of hope for the future when you see the spirit of creativity and entrepreneurship that we're seeing, particularly amongst our small businesses. And we've tried to help. We've put close to £300 billion in various different ways to support not just public services, but the economy, people's income, businesses in particular, with a huge range of grants and loans and tax cuts, deferrals, things that, the word unprecedented gets used a lot, but certainly things I never imagined ever having to do as Chancellor, things that we've never done before in this country. So both in scope and in quantum, I'm confident that we've done a lot. And if you look internationally at various metrics, I think the numbers would bear that out. That said, I've always been clear, I can't save every job, I can't save every business. It's simply not possible for me to do that. Difficult as this whole thing is, and even given how much we've thrown at it. So I know that, and I'm incredibly sad about it. But I do think what we've done will make an enormous difference to many. And as you said, what we're trying to do is keep as much of our economy together as we can, so that now we have a bit more clarity on the light at the end of the tunnel and the vaccine rollout, we can look forward to better times. And I know our businesses will spring back to life when we get through on the other side of this.
Yeah, and we'll talk about those better times in a sec. But, again, one question that many in the city are asking, even with interest rates as they are, is obviously that, the amount of borrowing is, as you rightly alluded to, unprecedented. Probably not the numbers you're expecting when you put the job in February. But, where is your thinking evolving on that kind of, along that train of thought? There are some in the city that say that, well, actually, it doesn't really matter that we're borrowing X, Y, and Z because of interest rates being where they are. On the other side of things, there's polling out from directors across the city expecting corporate taxation to be kind of where you start to think about paying back the bill, so to speak. Where's your thinking evolving on that?
It's difficult for me to talk about specific tax policy in advance of a budget, which I know you'll appreciate. But look, some broad thoughts when you think about fiscal policy. One is, I think it's right that we did what we did this past year. We've followed a really active fiscal policy. We've borrowed a lot to try and support the economy and businesses. I believe that's the right thing to do, given the nature of the shock that we're experiencing. And it will likely be the right strategy to continue supporting the economy in the short term as we recover from this. But over time, I think it's also important that public finances are sustainable. And look, lots of people have slightly different versions of what sustainable looks like, but I think most people agree that they should be sustainable over time. And that's something that, you know, I have to have regard to with the person who's responsible for the nation's finances. With regard to interest rates, you're right, and people are right, they are lower than they've been. And people, I think there's a rich debate as to the sources of that. Why is that? No one really knows exactly. There's a lot of different competing hypotheses for that. And the fact that we don't fully understand it and no one completely agrees on it, you know, probably means we should have some humility about, you know, saying, you know, what we think it will, how long it will last or what might happen to them in the future. And it's worth bearing in mind the sensitivity we have to changes in those rates because, you know, both through the QE, but the amount of debt that we have is linked to inflation, you know, and just generally the fact that rates are very low, you know, as those things change, you know, that will have an impact on our day-to-day public finances. And like any business that, you know, is kind of considering whether to have floating or fixed rate debt, you know, as a country, we're exposed to the same things. I have to be watchful of that. But it's certainly right that in a low interest rate environment, that gives governments more fiscal space, and using that fiscal space to do sensible things like investing in infrastructure to help boost long-term growth and productivity is a sensible thing to do in those circumstances, and that's what we're doing.
Yeah, fulsome answer. And you're thinking about that recovery, you know, one of the areas that obviously dear to our heart, but I know probably close to yours, having worked in the city and in financial services, is that, you know, cities in the whole are on the mat. You know, cities as a concept really are sort of having to rethink those. But when you think about the assumptions that underpin your policymaking going forward, the work from home revolution, so to speak, that's occurred this year, is that something that will underpin your policy decisions going forward? Or do you think that we will actually go back to the office, that the city of London, but also cities, will thrive again?
Yeah, I'm firmly in that camp. I mean, I think it's just so sad, right? Over the past few months, you know, when we were able to, and you walk around, say, London, and the same would be in many cities, and you just see what has happened, and the life has disappeared, and gosh, it's sad. And the buzz, the vitality, and then all the creativity that happens in those cities we're missing. And I think that's tragic. And I'm desperate for that to come back. And I'm a big believer that it will. I'm not one of these people who thinks, oh, the history books have been now written on cities. I think we're as human beings, we're social animals. We crave that interaction, right? We like going to theatres, galleries, to restaurants, to eat out, to see our friends, to see our work colleagues, and have that spark of ideas that happens. So I think all of that will come back, and I think it's a good thing that it does, because it makes our lives richer and our cities are dynamic engines of economic growth. So that's kind of where I am on all of that.
Mm. And no doubt there will be people pushing you to do things in the budget to sort of speed that process up. But the other, I suppose, threat to the City of London is obviously, I say threat in the widest term, is the departure from the European Union. The deal that was struck just before Christmas does not wildly feature financial services. There's a degree of help on legal services and so on and so forth. But on financial services, I know that the Prime Minister said he wanted slightly more. Andrew Bailey has now said that, you know, the EU's demands to a degree on equivalence go too far, and that we should never be a rule taker. When you think about Brexit and financial services, do you see opportunities as much as you see, you know, things that need to be sorted this year?
There's someone who comes from that industry professionally. I'm an enormous fan and believer in the industry. It contributes so much to the economy, and not just in London, as we all know. And there are many things in the deal that are good for financial services. I think there are some broad provisions around the free flow of data and business travel, both of which obviously will be of enormous benefit to financial services firms. There's some very clear language about about legal protection against discrimination and market access, which is to be welcomed. And then I think you know, probably more substantively, there is strong language on future regulatory cooperation and putting in place an MOU in reasonably short order to have that structured regulatory dialogue, and that's a forum for future equivalence decisions as well. So I think that is a positive, that's a positive feature of the deal, which you know, which hopefully gives people some reassurance about the relationship that we will have with our European partners going forward. But regardless of that, I think it's important that we get on and make sure that the City of London and Financial Services, this remains the most dynamic place to do FS anywhere in the world. And in back in November, I set out a kind of vision for post-Brexit financial services and listed a lot of different initiatives that we're pursuing to probe at that dynamism, that competitiveness. So whether it's, you know, re-examining our listings regime, whether it's Solvency II, whether it's what we're doing in green finance, what we're doing on digital with stablecoin or central bank digital currency regulation or payments infrastructure. You know, there's a whole range of things that we can do slightly differently now, and we should look forward to taking full advantage of all of those opportunities. And you know, I'm already working with people in the industry to see what we can do. But I think the thing I'd say is, yeah, is regulation important? Of course it is time zone, is language, etc. All those things are important. But I think what is probably more important is the culture and creativity of our people. And no document can take that away from us. And because we have that, I feel very confident and very excited about the future of the City of London and financial services in general.
I was speaking to someone yesterday, it's my last thought really, and you can respond however you see fit, Chancellor. We were saying that the time's come for the city to sort of look back at the Big Bang playbook to go forward and go global. Do you think we're on the cusp of another Big Bang for financial services?
You know, I think that person makes a really good point, because if you look at the history of the city, stretching even, you know, way further back than that, you know, the City of London has always constantly innovated, adapted and evolved to changing circumstances and thrived and prospered as a result. And I think it will continue to do that. And hopefully we can play a role in that, but all the businesses and the people involved will help us do that. I think we always should be looking forward and figuring out what can we do differently and how can we turn things into opportunities. And I think this is a perfect platform for that. And whether you want to call it Big Bang 2.0 or whatever, but I think the person you spoke to, you know, I think they're onto something.
Well, an optimistic note to start 2021 and start looking towards another decade. Thanks so much for joining us, Chancellor, and I'll let you get back to the day job.
Yeah, no, fantastic. Andy, really great to speak to you, and hopefully we can chat again in the future. Cheers.
Great stuff from the Chancellor indeed. Thanks to all of our guests today, and thank you too for listening. Make sure you check in next week. That was the City View podcast in partnership with CMC Markets. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. And in the meantime, all the news, analysis and opinion you need will be on cityam.com.
CMC Markets is one of the world's leading CFD and spread betting providers with more than three decades of experience. Trade with CMC and you're trading with experts. 79% of retail investor accounts lose money.